Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, number 275 in our fleet of main shows. And this is the News and Cues. I'm Ken Napsack.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I'm happy to be here on one of the ships in our fleet. One of the main ships. We have a big fleet.
It's a big fleet. Almost, you'd say, a star fleet, which, you know, we're going to review that book a little later this week, where that's mentioned. Anyways, I'm getting off track. Yeah, we're here, man. It used to be one superstar destroyer, just kind of, you know, leading the way. Now we got a lot of different ships going on. And I love it. And I love being of all shapes and sizes, different ships in our fleet. What's the equivalent of our, is Star Wars ranked the Quasar class?
I think so. It has 5 slots yes. For different opinions to come out of.
That's good. What's the Data Bank Brawl ship?
My God. That is a junk. What? It probably Dash Rendar's Outrider. Like cool, but weird.
Cool, but weird. We are... here, as always, to catch up but also talk about the news, take some great questions from all of you. And before we do any of that, we want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we have our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But now it's Star Wars and or Life Adventures. I know, Joseph, we had a holiday. You're like me. A lot of our Star Wars adventures is actually Star Wars prep for 4Center. And sometimes that just kind of makes the waters wonderfully muddy. But how was your last week, Ben?
Good. Right after we recorded our review of Chapter 13 of The Mandalorian, I sat down and watched it with my wife. And I look forward to that viewing. Because I view it 2 to 3 times before you and I review, and then I watch it with my wife. And that's like the episode where I watch it again as a fan and see it through her eyes. Mm-hmm. It was so fun to wait and watch for her reactions and see how she reacted to some of the revelations in that episode. And I had been really, really adamant of like, don't even look at your phone. Don't turn on any internet in the house. You will be spoiled immediately. And I think I kind of overplayed it. So she was like, oh, there are some really interesting things. What all did you think was going to be spoiled? It's like, I might have overdone it, but mostly yeah. the name. Yeah. So that was fun. That was great. Star Wars adventure. And then, you know, Thanksgiving weekend, we put up our Christmas tree. I think I've mentioned before, I have a broken down old $20 fake Christmas tree that I bought, I believe, in 1998 for a sketch comedy. And it is still alive. And we love our weird little tree. So we had fun putting it up. I love putting up. Well, let me phrase it differently. I love having put on the Christmas lights. I do not like putting them on. It is about the destination, not the journey, that one for me. So that was kind of my life adventure. Whereas, like, Sarah, my wife, can I be grumpy while I'm doing this? We're trying to get some holiday spirit, some cheer, but are you okay if I get real cranky and swear? And she's like, yes, that's okay. So.
Oh, Christmas tree.
Exactly. And then as soon as they're all on, it's beautiful and peaceful. But it's always fun. The reason I bring up my swearing at the Christmas tree is that the specific holiday Star Wars things come out from the boxes that I forget about, including the Santa Claus Han combination, where Han always keeps his blaster on Santa Claus on our Christmas tree. And we have a little Kylo Ren lurking nearby. And I forgot that we got the Funko Pop of Yoda as Santa. And that's really fun to see. Not baby Yoda, but actual Yoda in his Santa costume. So it was nice to have the new old holiday Star Wars friends come out and brighten the apartment. So that's kind of my life Star Wars adventure.
That's a full week, man. That's a full week.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I think a lot of people have the partner viewing, the other people in your life who love Star Wars, maybe don't follow it as much as you and I do, don't have a podcast where they have to analyze every second of it. And I go through that Friday evening. This time it was Friday afternoon. Cause I know Grace she's a big Star Wars fan, but she's aware of Ahsoka. She doesn't know who she is too much. But she's so there for the journey of Baby Yoda. And I did not want her to hear that name either. Like that was because it's so great. I love the way they introduce it. By the way, I guess we should always put out Mando spoilers.
Yeah, I think so. I think that should maybe just be since it's different this time around where, you know, last time we were waiting for half the world to get Disney Plus. I think the main shows are spoiler zones for Mandalorian.
Yeah, we will try and give those warnings. Because we know just not everyone has a chance to. You might have 3 kids of your own, and they're trying to eat eggs that you don't want to eat in your house, and all those good things. But anyways, I don't want to linger too long on it, but just that moment of discovery, the name and the reaction from the child to his name being said by Din is just one of my favorite little just tug on the heartstring moments of Star Wars, and it broke her in a good way. She just was just tears of joy. Just thought it was the best, and it was a highlight of the episode for her. So it's always fun to have that viewing. We should do the Mandalorian report follow-up episodes where bring Sarah and Grace on and just let them discuss the true meaning of the episode, not what you and I dig into.
Yeah. It's true, because like sometimes Sarah sees things that I in a different way because she is not all in. Like, you know, that Passenger episode, the second Grogu looked at the eggs, she's like, he's gonna eat those. And I was like, no, I think maybe a Force connection. No, he's trying to eat them.
Freddy Diggs, which I can respect from a hungry man point of view. Other than that, man, my life, holidays, busy. Had a good, my first full vegan Thanksgiving. And you know, if you are not a vegan or a vegetarian, I am not here to lump that on you. Enjoy your turkey, enjoy your ham. And I do enjoy meat from time to time. It's more of a health decision. But it was good, man. It felt good. And we watched Endgame. Because Grace and her sister and brother-in-law, they're our little bubble, our social distance pod bubble, whatever you want to say. They just did a complete rewatch of MCU from Iron Man up to Endgame.
Wow.
And this is the end. And so, you know, as I said before in the show, I love every one of those movies. I've not seen all but two of them. Black Panther and Captain Marvel and Guardians and Iron Man. Those are the ones that I've seen more than once.
Okay.
I've never not enjoyed them. I wasn't raised on Marvel or DC stuff in terms of superheroes, so I don't get pulled in as much as others, and I know you do. I mean, it's a big thing for you too. I don't know if people fully realize that you could easily do Marvel's then. but I loved it, and their joy, and they're kind of taking that journey with them. I get it. I get why the MCU works on that level. And it was moved by some of those moments. And it was, and they're very, it's similar to the ways, kind of moved in Star Wars at times, that I personally am moved by things in Rise of Skywalker. It's part of a long journey for me. And you and I watched that. We saw the first screening, our screening was together. And
yeah.
you were sitting by each other in the El Capitan. And I just was doing the shoulder slumped crying while everyone else in the theater was getting their snarky tweets ready, but that's a different conversation. And I shed some tears again too. I mean, it's hard not to when you see Chadwick Boseman on screen, but I like a lot of the moments, because I am not, it's funny. It's almost like I am not, I am to Marvel what others are to Star Wars, what you and I are just describing. I am not there diving into every second. So I know there was a debate on the great female character moment in that movie. I'm moved by it, by just on a simple level of generations of female fans who probably felt they had to hide their love or were told they couldn't love it. And to just see that moment on screen, I was moved by it there on the couch, stuffed with vegan Thanksgiving food. it was a nice experience to just go back and find the joy in that property as well, not always need to spend it in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, that's great. And they are such different flavors. But yeah, I grew up with those comic books. I didn't, I haven't kept up throughout the years, but those superheroes got me young, just like the Star Wars characters. So there's that passion of the connection to the movies themselves. But for me, like a long journey with these characters. Endgame is funny because it gets compared to Rise of Skywalker for lots of reasons, but some of the most powerful moments, Cap and Poe are in sync there of like, I'm going to hold on to hope and I'm going to keep fighting no matter what. And then just that joy when the rest of, the galaxy, yeah, the rest of the heroes show up, and there's something just primal to me about that, of that feeling of I'm holding on, I'm going to keep holding on no matter what. But then the relief when all of these other people come and have your back is really, really powerful.
Yeah, man, you got to have backup.
Yeah. And then the other thing I'll say real quick, and we'll get back to Star Wars, about both Endgame and, Infinity War have a shot of the women coming together. And part of what's powerful about it is just in the context of the MCU, but also for me, like the comics weren't always incredibly great about representation. But if you read Avengers comics like I did, those women characters were there. And then, movies would get made. And for the most part, it would just be like, it's just this one character, it's just Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And so to finally get to see this universe so built up that all those characters who featured prominently in the comics were also there all together on screen. It's partially just a look back at that these characters are on screen, and together, and it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, again, love it. Worked for me. Worked for me there. And, you know, after that, I got to tell you, after that, I was like, made some conscious. I'm going to watch some other things. I've been watching, catching up on an old documentary that's about 10 years old on Monty Python, all those kind of things. But I got back in the gym because you need to do it after Thanksgiving. I was like, I am definitely going to watch something else, not Star Wars. 2 seconds later, what did I do? I started watching Solo. Star Wars, despite you and I talking about it for hours each week, it's still and always will be in my blood. So,
yeah.
There you go. All right, sir. We're caught up. And it's time to look at Star Wars news. And unfortunately, we're going to start with a sad story, but we want to turn every sad story into a good, just a chance to remember someone's, what they brought to the Star Wars story, what they brought to the movies, what they brought to our fandom. And of course, David Prowse passed away this weekend. He was 85. He was the man inside of the Darth Vader, I'll say costume, outfit, getup, whatever. He was Darth Vader and brought a lot to it. And I think there's over the years been more credit, correctly given to what Prowse actually did on set. Didn't take nothing away from James Earl Jones, but I think James Earl Jones would probably say the same thing. So Joseph, as we look back on David Prowse and what he brought to the Star Wars saga, what are some of your favorite memories of Vader the figure, not the toys, but just Vader the figure and David Prowse and everything he did?
Yeah, I think that's great to concentrate on. What did David Prowse do? Because Vader is such a complicated character. We hear him as James Earl Jones. His original physicality and presence is all David Prowse, but then you have Bob Anderson doing a lot of the fights. So I think it is a complicated relationship to, like, yes, everybody knows that. It's right there in the credits. David Prowse is Darth Vader along with James Earl Jones. But when I think about what he actually did to add up to the sort of great mystique that is Vader, is I think not just the height, but that the bodybuilding thing. Because I remember hearing about that a long time ago when I was a kid, of like, oh, Vader was a bodybuilder. And I was like, it's not like you see him like muscles bulging out.
Yeah.
But I think that posture and that power, that sense of power, like, I have never had great developed muscles, but when I do work out, I just feel a little more, strong, even if it isn't visually there. And I think he did just kind of exude this power and strength in his physical presence. And I think that's a ton of what he contributed. And then a thing that I have always loved and also, had a fun Star Wars sense of humor about is, the Darth Vader gesture to me is pointing. And, I did a sketch one of the very first times that I got to do a show that was just all pop culture nerd humor. It was the Darth Vader School of Sign Language, where everything he said was pointing except for join me was a fist, definitely had a sense of humor about it. But then when you look back at it too, like it is a great choice, because it is somebody who, that is a real power gesture, right? To just be like, whoever I'm talking to, it's just my finger in your face.
Yeah.
Is a gesture of, I am in command. I am telling you what to do. And I think it's a weird thing to pull out, but I think it is like one of the key moments of Vader's physical presence is that pointing gesture.
Yeah, the pointing, like I said, it's just impolite, right? I've gone through hospitality training. If someone asks me for a direction, I'm to wave my hand open, not point. So there's that, but just there's also the way he played it. And I think as the character of Vader has grown, it lines up and matches to what Prowse did with those points and the shakes, the shaking of the fists and all those kind of things of at times almost like a restrained anger. Like, he's the most powerful man in the room, and sometimes all he can do is just point at you, rip you from limb to limb. But I've always enjoyed that. And I'm glad you mentioned, the bodybuilding thing. And he's kind of an old school lifter, so he's got wide shoulders and chest and it comes from who he is. The John Cena's in the Rocks and they're in the gym 17 hours a day. And, maybe they have some special tuna every now and then that helps them. But, they're naturally big is what I'm saying. But he was as well. But exactly what I'm saying, he didn't lumber Darth Vader didn't lumber. There was an elegance to his stroll. There was something that a little added that was menacing. And I think you're right. It's how he knew to carry himself as 6'5" himself. And there's great shots of him. There's an old Benny Hill sketch he appears in that people were tweeting out this week that, you know, I love British comedy, not a huge Benny Hill fan. But, you know, he comes in and he's in his little swim trunks and he's got his broad shoulders doing his old school kind of bodybuilder pose. And it's Vader, you know, it is. It's Vader in shorts. You can see it. And looking back, and I'm like, you know, so you mentioned Bob Anderson, who was so great and a swordsman and worked with. If you're not familiar with Bob Anderson, look up his career. Just, you know, if there's a fight in a fantasy or pop culture movie, there's a good chance Bob Anderson has something to do with it.
If there's a good fight in Doctor Who, it's often Bob Anderson.
Really? Yeah. I mean, Lord of the Rings stuff is too. Peter Jackson brought him in for that. And I remember one point, I can't remember exactly, but probably in my early 20s, where the name Bob Anderson popped up and I was just like, well, no, David Prowse is Vader. Life was kind of saying yes, and Bob Anderson did too. So we honor what Bob Anderson did, but it's definitely you're not focused too much on the physicality of Vader during the fights. I mean, you are, but you know, like it is the memories of Vader are him strolling down a hallway and not lumbering, but standing over people and the menacing, all that kind of stuff. There, it just comes from Prowse, and we know he was acting on the set. You know, it's important. We see now with Mandalorian, it's important who's in those costumes. Is a lot comes from that. So, anyways, really appreciate that. So.
Yeah. You know, it's something I thought of when you were talking about just how aware he was of being menacing. There's been a lot in more modern canon, I'm sure it's there in Legends too, about how much Vader knows that he is terrifying, you know, and how much he uses that of like, yeah, absolutely, he can choke people to death, but he knows his face and his presence is just terrifying. And I think, you know, that story wouldn't be able to be told in books and comics if Prowse didn't have that demeanor of like, just that he seemed to know that Vader should loom, right? And we have like actual shots where Vader kind of looks down at somebody and looms, but he always has that presence. Like he knows he's menacing.
Yeah. Well said, because then a lot of storytelling legends otherwise is going to be drawn from New Hope, right? You know, that a lot of it just goes back to what we first were introduced to. And I think that's part of the Vader story is what you just said, being aware that he's Vader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. David Prowse, without a doubt, had an interesting relationship with Star Wars, other than he loved being part of it. He loved being Darth Vader. There's some well-documented things of maybe he ran afoul of Lucasfilm or George himself. And it leads to somewhat of a bittersweet, tragic story at times. There's some sadness there too. And there's a great documentary. At least I think it's great. You should check it out. If you haven't, it is called I Am Your Father. I Am Your Father, excuse me, by Marco Scabota and Tony Bestard. It came out in 2015. I think I watched it on Netflix. I don't know if it's still on there. Worth a viewing if you haven't seen it. Jamie Stangroom also sat down with Prowse a few years ago. You can check it out on his YouTube channel. Without a doubt, Joseph, there's some sadness there. He spoiled some things back in the day and was maybe a little upset at some of the choices made, including discovering that he was going to be voiced over and including not wanting to be the face behind the helmet when the mask came off in Return of the Jedi, which is a lot of what the documentary I Am Your Father is based around. They build up and try to recreate that moment for him. So there was some of that. And I think, I don't know, it's good. It was in passing. It was good to see the fandom not worried about any of that. They just love him and what he brought.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's always a valuable bit to remember that all of these stories are created by humans. And, you know, when we really appreciate the work of people like George Lucas or Dave Filoni or Mark Hamill or Carrie Fisher, on and on, we can kind of elevate them. And I think it is right to celebrate their accomplishments as artists, but also to really respect them as humans who are complicated. And I think, you know, David Prowse and Lucas and going back and forth and, you know, why, what was their beef? Who did what to who is, you know, it's a part of the Star Wars tapestry that all these creators are humans. And it's a part of the tapestry of Star Wars behind the scenes.
Yeah. His daughter, Rachel Prowse, tweeted out this Dad would have been over the moon about the reaction he has had today. Me and the rest of the family have been overwhelmed by the lovely comments and the sharing of some hilarious memories. Thanks, Twitter, for brightening a difficult day. I think that's great. I think in this age of social media, sometimes even myself, I can be like, that's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. But this is also the power of what it can be. It can connect people. It can raise voices up, raise, you know, the spirits of people too. And this is a great use of it. And yeah. And again, in passing, it's some, hey, we all got to go someday. And I'd still like to stick around to hear some of the nice things said about me. you know, it's just the way it works. And maybe you believe David Braz is looking down and watching the BBC news from his apartment in heaven. I don't know. but I saw this tweet and it actually touched me that she, you know, it kind of acknowledges that David Braz, he just would have loved this and loved this is something he was. He became Vader. I've never met him. Anything. I'm honored to have a personalized autograph from him that my friend Frank Kazarian gave me. It's on a variant cover of Darth Vader 1 from back in 2014. And Frankie Kazarian, pro wrestler extraordinaire, was at a convention signing and at a booth a couple spots away from David and got that for me. And it's just, you know, never met him, but it's just nice. Darth Vader wrote my name. and it's a part of my childhood as it is so many, Darth Vader, man. Darth Vader was the villain of my life, who I also grew to love and root for.
Yeah. And I thought Lucas's comment was really touching and kind, and knowing that they had their issues with one another, that he gave him such credit for, you know, helping to create Vader. And it's so it was really interesting to hear Lucas say he did a great job creating this villain in this tragic figure. And, you know, Lucas reinforcing again that he saw that sees Vader as a tragic figure. And I do think, you know, when you go back and watch A New Hope, he is just Darth Vader is a terrifying, a baddie, as David Prowse himself would say, use that turn of phrase. He's a baddie. He's a scary cinema villain for the ages. But in Prowse's performance with the moments where he moves and the moments where he's still and you don't really know what's going on behind the mask, there is that the part of Vader that is tragic does come out too. So I thought that was great to hear Lucas celebrate both the character and what Prowse added to the character.
Absolutely, indeed. And I think I said he was 6'5", 6'6", just double checking the article. I want to get that right, 6'6". that's important. So. This is the reality of our world. As we said, we've, Carrie Fisher, Peter Mayhew, Kenny Baker, a lot of the legends from that era, that time are moving on. It is, the Force would teach us to not mourn them, right? Miss them do not. Thanks, Yoda. But no, we do. And we will always have those memories and always have these characters. When you first saw them, we grow up with them. We learn from them. We still learn from them. But I love going back to being 7 and seeing Darth Vader come down the shuttle ramp in Return of the Jedi. And that was really my first actual, what is that? Who is this? And it was David Prowse making that happen for me. So thank you, David.
Yeah.
All right. From there, from Darth Vader, we are going to... Well, a hero, a couple heroes. I don't know. This just kind of came out this morning as we were getting ready to record. We wanted to kind of wedge it on into the news here. Anthony Bresnikan always does some great reporting. He is a reporter. He's a journalist in the old sense. He's probably got a little hat that says press on it. And Anthony is a great cat. You and I both have worked with him and known him over the last couple of years. He put out this dual interview stitched together like he's Dr. Frankenstein. He stitched together this interview with Dawson and Filoni, Rosario Dawson, Dave Filoni, about Ahsoka Tano, about The Mandalorian. There's a lot in there. There's a lot to discuss, a lot of good things. Joseph, you and I, we can pick out things we want to discuss in it, I guess, but also we want to focus on the thing that actually was added to the article after it came out.
Yeah.
The timeline question that a lot of people have about this recent chapter of Mandalorian. So, Joseph, where do you want to go in?
Let's start with the ending.
Yes, that's very Star Warsy.
Exactly, and kind of goes with this question, which I had missed because I read it early in the morning, and then And then more. There was more.
Yeah. Brezhnikin tweeted out. He said, thanks for all the retweets and favorites. We're going to add this. I'm like, is that how it works? If we just get it, we get bonus content if we like the article. Yeah. So here's the deal. Like I said, again, full spoilers. If you have not seen the end of Rebels, if you've not seen the end of this most recent Mandalorian and you want to, we're going to dive into it here. The end of Rebels, the coda, the epilogue includes the moment where Ahsoka the White, as we call her, similar to Gandalf the White in Lord of the Rings, returns, grabs Sabine on Lothal and said, hey, we got to go find Ezra. He's out there somewhere with Thrawn. Now cut to chapter 13. This is part of the quest of Ahsoka Tano, sitting there with the magistrate. Morgan Elsbeth saying, hey, where's your master? Where's Grand Admiral Thrawn? So where does it all fit in, Joseph? We love timelines. We love canon. We're junkies to that, you've heard.
Yeah.
We like that too. We also like the spirit of the storytelling. So real quickly here, then I'll get your thoughts in here. Dave says this. I don't know. I think I should read. Here we go. Dave said this when asked of where does that scene fit in?
I think you should just read the Brezhnikin's question and Filoni's quote. Why not? All
right. We're doing this on the fly. This is like a good yes and. All right. Here we go. So the quest we learn is the search for the villain Grand Admiral Thrawn. The last time fans saw Ahsoka was this spring's finale of the Clone Wars, but in the actual Star Wars chronology, the last time we saw her was at the end of Rebels, venturing off of Sabine Wren to find Ezra Bridger, who vanished along with Thrawn. Where does that scene fit in where we find her in the Mandalorian? Dave Filoni, probably the sly grin behind a cowboy hat. Right. But no, it's an interesting one. That's not necessarily chronological. I think the thing that people will most not understand is they want to go in a linear fashion. But as I learned as a kid, nothing in Star Wars really works in a linear fashion. You do episodes 4, 5, and 6, and then 1, 2, and 3. So in the vein of that history, when you look at the epilogue of Rebels, you don't really know how much time has passed. So it's possible that the story I'm telling in The Mandalorian actually takes place prior to that. Possible. I'm saying it's possible. End of interview. Joseph, what do you think about the Filoni of it all?
I love this for so many reasons. So after my wife and I did that viewing of chapter 13, and she had some questions because we've watched, you know, bits and pieces out of order, and she's like, can you remind me of Ahsoka's timeline? And it's like, I can, and I would love to. Are you okay? Because I'm gonna go hard. I'm gonna go all in. I'm gonna tell you the variables.
I envision you pulling down a chart, like that Charlie Day meme that goes around, just pulling down that chart behind your Christmas tree.
It really was. She's like, no, it's okay. You can do it all. So I got to this and I said, not exactly this, but got to this crux of, we've got this coda at the end of Rebels that feels like it's right after Endor, but there's nothing in it that confirms it's right after Endor.
Right.
So there's this room to say in chapter 13 of The Mandalorian, when she's like, where's Grand Admiral Thrawn, that it could be because she's desperate to find Ezra because she hasn't found him yet. Mm-hmm. Or it could be that she went and tried to find Ezra with Sabine. Something bad happened and now she's really after Thrawn. And we just don't know which it is. And Sarah was like, oh, that's great. That's fun. And the reason that I just wanted to start here is because I think this is so important to how we talk about Star Wars, how Filoni talks about Star Wars. Filoni has said in other interviews that he likes to have a little bit of ambiguity in Star Wars, a little bit of wiggle room, because he himself as a fan knows that a part of it is a part of the fun of Star Wars is wondering and maybe not ever having the answer or maybe not having the answer yet. And I just think that this is really important because this response from Filoni, we get to interpret, but what he's saying right now is there aren't firm answers. Right now, we don't, as fans, know exactly where in the timeline this is. You could interpret this as him hinting and saying, actually, what I want to do now is say, Ahsoka's on a mission to find the location of Grand Admiral Thrawn. When she knows that, then she'll get a white cloak and a cool staff and go tell Sabine that she's ready to go find Ezra. That sounds to me like what he's hinting at, mm-hmm, timeline-wise. But again, it's so open for discussion and interpretation right now because we don't know.
We don't know. I'll insert some silly real-world thoughts. March 5th, 2018 was the aired finale of Rebels. As we know in animation, he's probably working on that ending 2, 3, 4 years prior. You know, like that's how it works. And the idea of a Disney Plus series with The Mandalorian, and that the second season of it, you can incorporate some of these characters, I don't think it's in his brain. Even though Mandalorian had 2, 3 years prep of lead up time to actually get to this point. I honestly think it's similar to Clone Wars season 7, where he gets to go back when he didn't think he would.
Yeah.
And he, I'm not saying the Coda finale, I think the spirit of it was right after Endor. And there's some other things around, you know, the other character stuff we learn, Hera and her son, everything that I'm like, okay, I think it's relatively right after Endor. And he's right. There is no timestamp on it. There is no weeks later, 6 months later. There isn't really any of that. So it's totally open. But I just think now he's like, holy crap, I get to maybe go explore it in a different way. I'm going to go evaluate how I want to tell that story now. And that's definitely the spirit of Star Wars. That's what George has been doing to us a lot. I can't wait to get a hold of that. I don't have yet the Paul Duncan Star Wars archives about the prequels and special edition, because there's some great stuff in there that I saw about the past. And also, I think it might even be the one I do have, where there was that story conference in 81 leading up to Return of the Jedi, where George lays out a lot of the history. And he tells Kasdan and Kazanjian and Marquand, no, Leia's mother had the kids, or, you know, Anakin's wife, and he's with Leia for about, she's with, I should say, Leia for about 6 months or so before she dies.
Yeah, she goes to Alderaan with Leia.
Yeah. And George goes back and tells it a different way, because he's like, yeah, I want to. This is how it works for me. We talked a lot about it, Force Center, almost to the point, I don't want to finger wag, but it's just like, that's the spirit of storytelling versus putting down timelines on paper and broadcasting those. So I'm very open to the idea. I personally want it to be, I want the Mandalorian to be after, but I like the idea of 9 years of Ezra and Thrawn in Purgletown. Eventually, from beginning New Hope to now, that'd be about 9 years if they can't find him. I like that.
Yeah, and I mean, it also extends the story possibilities to Thrawn and Ezra's adventures tying in with the beginnings of First Order, and it gets us, it lets us go like, hey, if there ever is this great Ahsoka and Sabine go finding Ezra and Thrawn, no, they might find Ray Carson too, you know?
Yeah, Ray Sloan, yeah.
Or Ray Sloan, excuse me, yeah. Ray Carson is an author. Ray Sloan is a character. My apologies.
Ray Carson's just out there writing. Hey, what's going on?
They can find all the authors out there.
That'd be great. Yeah, yeah. And look, I say it so much that it sounds like I said it. You said it first here, and it is a Force Center thing of engaging with the story presented to you. It does not mean not speculate. It does not mean have your own theories. It does not mean have your own opinions on what you actually saw. Watch. It just means that the story will roll out in front of you, and you'll get what you get, or you might not get the answer. You know, Bob Snoke, well, we might never know what Bob Snoke did before he became Snoke, you know,
yeah.
Or Bob Snoke, his cousin. But the potential is there, and now it is. We have this. That's to me what I love about Disney Plus. And while I did re-up my subscription to the evil monster Disney, and I understand there's problems with it, I'm there for that too, but I love what this does to me as a Star Wars fan. Now you could tell all these stories that you just couldn't do 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah. And I think that's a big thing too, for Filoni. We as Star Wars fans know that he is, you know, really the Padawan to Lucas, and he has done a ton of the Star Wars storytelling that means a lot to us. Like, he's still in a corporate structure, and he didn't have the keys to the kingdom enough to do some of the storytelling he can now. And I think that makes a difference as well.
Was he trained by George Lucas? I haven't heard him say that.
I think he was.
he was. No, kidding. I love Filoni's philosophies. Seriously, I do. I really love, you know, the stuff he puts out. I'm not going to tweet out a meme of me praising a Filoni head in the sky like I saw going around last week. But I absolutely, he's plugged into it. He understands this stuff so well, and I'll follow him on the adventure. Anything else in the interview that jumped out to you that we want to discuss here today?
Yeah, two things. Just one, just kind of the fun thing is, I think I'd maybe heard it somewhere before, but I didn't, or seen it on social media, but I didn't realize that Rosario Dawson had gone to college with Hayden Christensen or been in that Shattered Glass movie. And I thought the interview, the photo in this interview of them together, and I know a lot of people have already seen this, and it's one of the reasons that they fan casted Rosario Dawson in their mind. But that was fun for me because if I had seen it before, I forgot about it. And now that she is Ahsoka for sure, that was really fun to see a picture of Anakin and Ahsoka hugging in college.
It's a small world sometimes, this industry.
The other quote that I wanted to talk about for just a minute, Ken, is so Bresnikan says the episode is called The Jedi, but Ahsoka's whole identity is based around leaving the Order.
Right.
And Filoni says, yeah, I think something fans like about the character is that she's rather complex. They all focus very hard on the line, I am no Jedi from Star Wars Rebels, but it's undeniable that she's trained by the Jedi. I think to most observers, she is very Jedi to them. I would argue in some ways, by being so selfless and rejecting a lot of the past that would have given her power, she's more Jedi-like than even some of the characters who claim to be Jedi. I thought that was great.
Burn.
What's that?
Burn.
A burn on other Jedi. Yeah, I mean, I think because there's been a discussion about, you know, her being called the Jedi in this episode. You know, I brought it up of it's called the Jedi, and Ahsoka doesn't seem to take the time or the energy to correct anyone. When they call her a Jedi, you know, think about more too. I just kind of felt like, if Filoni really wanted that to be a discussion point, you know, he would have made room in the episode for it, I think. Mm-hmm. But I also just thought I was drawn to this because I think this is another point where I think Star Wars is written to leave room for debates. And I think Filoni likes that from what he said in other interviews. And I think that for me, I'm fascinated by this story that there was the Jedi Order. They gave Ahsoka many perspectives and beliefs that she ingrained. And then when she got upset with the Jedi Order, it's because they weren't living up to what they had taught her. So I don't ever see her as rejecting the core principles of what it is to be a Jedi. I see it as her rejecting the Jedi Order because they were failing on those principles. So I really like this idea that the order fell, the pageantry and structure around how you get labeled officially by a Jedi and who gets to hand out the title, that stuff is all gone. And Ahsoka is pursuing the path that she thinks is most Jedi-like. So for me, I think I just really felt that as somebody who's always on about justice for the Jedi, that's one of the things I really loved about the episode is, yeah, maybe she was having a direct conversation with Luke eventually, or if we get to see her have a Force Skype meditation chat with Yoda, maybe those issues will be more up for grab. But I like that she's just like, the order's gone. Here are the principles that I live by. And if people want to call me a Jedi, I'm going to let them because I'm trying to be my definition of that. And the spirit of it matters more to her right now than the technical definition of the title is the way that I really enjoy it as a fan.
I'm right there with you on it. I think the kind of the growth of Ahsoka and her journey and becoming herself is so powerful to so many people. And I've taken my own things from it personally in my life, and my upbringing and being raised and trained in certain areas and going, well, your actions don't match up to what you're even telling me to be. And it doesn't, you know, no baby tossed out with the bathwater here is what to start with Ahsoka. Like let's get to the core of what this really means. And that's been very powerful. And I think therefore it is justice for the Jedi, right? Just for the concept. It's what you keep talking about. And it continues. I think why I really do love this episode, when people have asked me over the last couple of days, text me, oh, did you love it? What's your favorite part? It's like, it's the campfire stuff, man. It's really interesting. And as someone, you know, who has said before, I love the rebellion and the Empire. Give me some fighting and some pew, pew, pews. I don't follow the Jedi as much as others have, but I'm fascinated about what it means to be a Jedi. And you can continue to ask that question and lessons can still come from that all the way up to Luke. In Last Jedi, this is fascinating stuff, and I think it really worked. And the title, I still think it as I interpret it have for me a little bit more of just the general too of the Jedi in the galaxy right now. What does it mean? And because she mentions there's only so few of them left, and I'm intrigued by who that might mean. Luke, Ezra, Cal Kestis, all these names, or something completely different. Or
Quinlan Vos.
Yeah, you suggested Quinlan Vos, which would be great because he's one of those Jedi that's like, let's ask ourselves what it is to be a Jedi.
Yeah.
I think that's great stuff. So I think it all works, and that's why that title spoke to me.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just happy to see Bresnikan's so great at being, yes, he could easily cosplay Clark Kent and Superman. He's a great, like, reporter guy. Yeah. But he's also just such a thorough Star Wars fan as well. It's great for him to ask those questions. So it's really fun to see an article like this that's, like, really reflects the things that fans are talking about, you know, in their excitement over this episode.
Absolutely. A lot in the article, bigger things, and even a mention of Yaddle and Filoni joking that maybe he should have said it's a baby Yaddle. But all that's in there, we recommend you check it out. Read everything in it for yourself. It's on Vanity Fair right now. Or just, go follow Anthony Bresnikan on Twitter, and he'll have some links to it as well. Support the Brez. Support the Brez. Next story here. We've got the Rise of Skywalker comic adaptation has been canceled, though I still think that that's not a period on the end of that sentence. This, looking at the fine folks at Star Wars News Net kind of put together this article in a easy way for me to look at all the things going on here back in February. And shout out to Miguel Fernandez is the one who wrote this story on Star Wars News Net. Back in February, Marvel announced the Rise of Skywalker adaptation was coming. As every other movie has had, and Jody Houser, who you know Jody, and Jody has just been one of my favorite Star Wars writers with a lot of her comic stuff recently. She was going to be doing it. Then in April, because of COVID, they postponed it, moving that and a lot of other things back a bit. And then May 27th, Rise of Skywalker was not dated, if you're following the timeline. Now, after months of uncertainty and speculation, writes Miguel, it now appears the new series will not be released at all. But like I said, there's always a way. We got the novel adaptation by Rae Carson, as you mentioned. That's probably why she was on your mind there.
Not in the unknown regions. That's Rae Sloane. Not in the apologize. Unknown.
They also are not going to reprint Rise of Kylo Ren number 4. So let's talk about this, go through what this means. I think on the surface is a lot related to the pandemic. But what say you, sir?
Yeah, I hope they release it eventually. I think Jody is a great Star Wars writer, a great Star Wars adapter, as she's proven. She is a pal of mine, so I would love it for her. I know that she was excited for it when last I talked to her about it. She did not spill any thoughts or secrets, and just expressed that she was excited and I was excited for her. So I really hope that they release it. I think it's kind of inside the Star Wars bubble news enough that it hasn't linked out to like a clickbait of like more evidence that the Rise of Skywalker is bad kind of articles. But I think that there's a fascinating thing with the Skywalker saga of it is undeniably powerful. But the world is kind of changing around it as The Rise of Skywalker came out, right? Have this be the first Skywalker saga film where Hasbro, Kenner, / Hasbro, didn't make classic 3¾ action figures specifically for the film, right? There were a couple of the vintage figures. We got the novelization. That was great. And hopefully the comic book adaptation won't be like that where the action figures didn't come out. Because it kind of feels like the world is changing, things need to adapt and things need to be a little bit different. But I want the some of the kind of classic things that come with the movie to all be there for Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, the figure thing, it was a little blip on my radar screen. I know you were affected by it, not necessarily more than me, but I didn't stop to think of, wow, that ends something. That's something that's, this has just always been taxes, yep. Death, and Star Wars figures and comics tied to the movies. So we didn't get that. But I think you're right. It's changing. The markets are changing. And you just can't deny that right now. Like I cannot go to my shop right now. And I am a physical comic buyer. I haven't switched to digital. It's affected my viewing, my reading. I haven't touched the new Aphra series. I'm behind on the Vader series in the main line by 2 months. And podcasts have changed. You and I have seen that. The numbers different, not necessarily bad or better, but just different. People's habits have changed this year. And I got to think that It's something to do with what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah. So I have great hopes that it will come out and see the light of day eventually, and I'll be excited to read it.
I will too. Yeah, and again, Jodi Hauser, her adaptation of the first Thrawn novel is great, because I was okay with that novel. You know, I like it. I like it enough, but she brought out parts of that story that just I was like, got it, love it. So she's great, great writer, and hope she gets her chance on this one, or we get a chance to see it with whatever was done. Final thing, we always check in on Mando Mondays. Just another Mando Monday. There you go. I don't know. This one's okay. We got some cool toys. Long Live the Empire, Gideon shirt, some timepieces. I don't wear a timepiece anymore, Joseph, so I have a phone. Talk about things changing. do you want to get this timepiece from Invicta?
That was the thing that I was most excited about. I probably won't purchase it, but it's a cool watch with the Armorer's helmet on it, and the Armorer was one of my favorite characters going into season one, and the spoilers continue. I'm even more intrigued by the Armorer now, knowing she's a cult leader. For good or for ill, she is a cult leader. And it's like, hey, get this cult leader for a watch. And I can't wait to see her again, speaking about what we don't know yet. We just don't know. Yeah. We don't know if, you know, why she did what she did, you know, and why she did not tell Din Djarin updated truths about the galaxy and instead just told him about some songs that may have been sung in eons past.
Eons past, the story of the armor. Love it. Yeah, I do the fourth class droid print from Acme Archives. It's IG-11 with the little satchel on the child. It's great. It speaks to me now that it didn't during season one, because our oldest Chihuahua, Ratsy, Adelaide is her birth name. She's a little older. She's 16 and a half, and she just can't get around as much anymore. So we have like a little baby Bjorn type thing. And I've spent all weekend and most of Thanksgiving with our Chihuahua strapped to the front of me. Baby, really, like Grogu here. And so now I'm connecting more with Mandalorian and IG-11 than I thought.
Yeah.
So I might, who knows, maybe I'll pick up that print.
I find myself wondering if and when and how fast all of this mountain of merchandise will be changed from the child to Grogu.
So I would love to give them credit. I can't. Someone in our Force Center Discord said that. They say, oh man, I'm looking forward to a new, a cavalcade of new old material with new names on it. Old
Mark. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's the beauty of it. There you go. We'll always keep you updated on Mando Mondays. While it is going on. That is the news. But before we get on to your cues after the break, we want to do our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we got?
This week we have From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back edition. We are going to be finishing our review of that this coming Thursday, so check it out.
Absolutely. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. Quick break. We're going to reset on the other side. Your questions here on ForceCenter.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost.
Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, 4Center fans, don't forget 4Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's 4Center on YouTube. Check it out. Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. All right, everybody, welcome back to 4Center. As I said up top, episode 275, and the exact count, Joseph, is I wrote it down somewhere. I was going to add to it, but I think we're approaching 900 total broadcasts. When 900 total broadcasts you reach, be good. So, well, who knows? Maybe we'll celebrate. Maybe I'll finally do the official count. But happy to be with you here all on the news and cues. This has been a lot of fun for us to. We decided to do this a bit ago this year, break up the main show so we could take our time with our deep dives, take our time with the news, but also more importantly, take our time with your questions because you always send a bunch of great questions in. Joseph, what do we have this week?
Yeah, we got some questions from Twitter and Patreon as always. We start with Twitter. We got one from Glenn Davis. Glenn says, I've been listening to Star Wars audiobooks and after Dooku and Master and Apprentice, I've been a bit obsessed with Rael Avaros. What medium would you like to see him appear in next? I'm just going to jump in and say all of them. I really like Rael Avaros. But Ken, where do you go with this? Where would you like to see Rael again?
I mean, look, I want more of Rael Avaros because overall my view on him is really positive. I am fascinated by a Jedi that's like, let's drink and get down. All right, we're good. Talk about what it means to be a Jedi. He's got some thoughts. The voice choice was not bad. I was on my walking path in Burbank. I wish someone was videotaping me the first time Rael Avaros's voice pops up in Dooku Jedi House because I had to stop. Oh, yeah, okay. I guess that makes sense.
It's a bit of a drawl, right?
Rael Avaros here, Qui-Gon. We're going to go ahead and have some drinks and be Jedi. I like it, man.
He really did sound like he was going to do a cigarette commercial on a 1940s radio show.
Yes. Give me Sam Elliott. Put him in there. Any other, I don't know who you could, Kurt Russell. Too. I don't know. I don't care. All those.
I think Benjamin Bratt is who Claudia Gray said she was picturing.
Yes, she did say that, right? I love Benjamin Bratt going all the way back to Demolition Man. So let's go to Taco Bell for dinner, dancing, and Rael Avaros in there as well. As far as where he is, give me a Disney Plus series on Inside the Jedi Temple, just a series of in-canon on-screen interviews with Jedi.
Yeah, I'm up for more individual Jedi storytelling. I think that we're obviously going to get a ton of that in High Republic, but yeah. I would love to have more Jedi stories with characters we already know, because I think we've been getting more and more as more Jedi characters get created, of letting them have their own eccentricities, their own perspectives, really be shaped by the events in their life. And what I like about Rael Avaros is he's not just a Jedi who's like, what, I'm sloppy and I drink too much and sex is an attachment. What's your problem? Why are you uptight? I think that's all fun and that's great and I love it, but I love that it's coming from a place that he had this great tragedy, you know, of losing someone. It kind of drove him to that perspective, but that, you know, in the first story we meet him in, he does reaffirm his connection to the light, that he is a Jedi. It's just he's got some different ideas about exactly how that might look. And again, going back to this idea of sometimes the rules are really, really necessary. Some rules you can't break, some rules you can't bend, but other times the spirit is what matters. And I think he's really fascinating to be yet another perspective on that, of what is the spirit of the Jedi. And which rules are bendable, which rules are breakable, and which aren't. So I would love to see him in a book or a comic. I think that makes sense to see him pop up there. We don't know the end of his existence.
Right.
So I would also, I'll throw him out here, you know, if, and again, we're full Mando spoilers on here. You know, the Mandalorian's latest role-playing game mission is to climb to the top of the mountain on the Jedi Temple on Tython and put Grogu on the scene stone. And then Grogu may or may not call out to a Jedi. I'll take Rael Avaros there. How weird would that be? How exciting would that be? This very old man who, you know, just was disillusioned and survived Order 66, but stayed out of it, but has a real different perspective. Why not? Sure, I'll throw him on the possibility pile with Quinlan Vos and Ezra and Cal Kestis and Sarah Junda. Throw him on the possible Jedi pile.
That's great. First of all, because I love the idea of The Mandalorian becoming a show where a bunch of characters Jon Favreau has no idea are start showing up.
What if Favreau does come to the you know, not like he isn't leading the story developing thing, but like a guy. Okay, so there's this Jedi who survived Order 66, right? And he's real old and gruff, and maybe like a little bit of a southern drawl, and like he smokes death sticks and he has sex, and like everybody in the room is like, yes, Rael Avaros.
And Favreau's like, son of a, you telling me there's that character too? I love this fictitious Mandalorian writer's room you and I keep referencing that we think all this happens. Yeah, that's a great choice. On Rael Avaros, I'm glad Glenn Davis asked this question. And gosh, I hope that's former Houston Astros slugger Glenn Davis that listens to Force Center. Probably not. Glenn, God bless you. Growing up, you know, this story would have been fallen to the dark side. And I love that you highlighted that Rael Avaros isn't about that. It is more complicated, deliciously complicated, and more real, and is about kind of what we're talking about with Ahsoka too, of this, analyzing what it is to be a Jedi and different ways to approach it, but always, you know, again, leaning towards the light or going towards the light. That's really fascinating stuff to me. And I think as I as I have said, and 900 episodes, you know, again, a lot of you have said, there's probably other Spotlight Star Wars episodes where I've just been like, not so much. I'm not into the Jedi as much as others. True for a different time. Different time in my fandom, a different time in Star Wars. I am so intrigued by Jedis with questions, Jedis with obstacles, and Jedis with stumbles versus the shining white knights with the blue or green lightsabers or purple, always ready to fight the guys and the gals with the red ones. Like, that is the overall story because it's light versus dark, but I love taking a deep dive into it. So yeah, give me some real Avras.
Yeah. That's, I think, what is really fascinating to me about the Jedi and some of the great Jedi storytelling that we've always had, but we're getting, I think, spread out over more eras, more Jedi. Is the point is, it's a difficult path, and they care very, very much, and they try to stay on that path and find a way that works for them, and they stumble. And then when they stumble, sometimes they give up for a while because they care so much. And I just love getting that storytelling of characters who hold themselves to an incredibly high ideal and then wrestle with how to cope with it when that idea of how to do that evolves, or when they make a mistake. And I think that's the storytelling that we're getting with somebody like Ahsoka, who is very pure ultimately, but even Ahsoka is like, okay, this is a hard path to walk, and I got to find it, you know, and I got to question it again and again throughout my life.
Jedi are heroes, but how do they get to that point of choosing to be a hero time and time again is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and how do they stay on the path? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you for letting us talk about Rael Avros. I'm sure we will talk about the character again. I really hope he returns sometime soon. Moving on to our next question from Anthony Poirier. Anthony says, is there a Lego Star Wars set, ship, or minifigure that they haven't yet made that you'd buy without hesitation? Personally, I think a line of lightsaber hilts would be wizard. Thanks, and may the Force be with you. May the Force be with you as well, Anthony. Ken, you have been collecting Star Wars Lego sets. You've been building them right on the airwaves of Twitch in front of everybody. How do you feel about this?
And on Brick Building with Ken, what a title. We just completed the U-Wing, which comes with 5 great minifigs. I have this weird habit while I'm broadcasting. I like to have like a, just kind of not a fidget spinner person, but just like I have something in my hands. And lately you'll hear me talking on Force Center and you'll hear this sound. That's usually a Lego minifig falling out of my hands. I got Jid in my hand right now. I got a Rebel Soldier. I got Cassian Andor. Bistan. Oh, Jennifer Landa would love this one. And then a U-Wing pilot. So I love these sets. I love building them. I love what they just, you know, truly, they kind of capture the imagination of Star Wars. I've been a Lego fan since I was a child in the early 80s. So this set, this question is great. I'm going big, Joseph. This is like a $20 set. I want Queel's hut. I want his little house. Give me Queel.
Oh yeah.
IG-11. Give me a Blurg, and maybe give me a child minifig too. And Mando coming for some chowder. There's that. But then I decided that's a small set. That's one of those $20 sets. You're at Target buying milk and eggs, and you're like, all right, and I'll buy a Lego set. But then there's the bigger ones. I have that Death Star one. I don't know when I'll be able to build it.
Wow.
I have the Cloud City one. It's huge. I could put wheels on it and drive it as a car. I want that size set, but I want the Navarro set, the main street of Navarro, where I want Grief, and I want Cara Dune, and IG-11. I want that school, but I also want it to be a bar. Give me Moff Gideon. Give me some stormtroopers. Maybe even include a TIE Outlander in it. Definitely an E-Web, so you can recreate that speech. I want all of that. And, of course, the client who wants the asset.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a Werner Herzog Lego minifig. That's what I need. And then have the Navarro Main Street. And then the other one, I'll kick it back to you here, Joseph. This might be the biggest set, even surpassing the Death Star. I want the Colossus.
Oh, my.
I want the Colossus.
By definition, that name, it's going to be big.
Yeah. I want this to be a, you know, 10,000-piece Lego set. I want Aunt Z's bar. I want Fireball. I want Jaeger. I want everyone on there. Give me a BB-8 as well, too. Give me a Poe for all I care. Give me First Order. I want the giant Colossus set that you got to rent a storage space just to build it and display it.
Oh, that is great. I think those are all great selections. Yeah. Yeah. For myself, I have not collected because of space. And I'm afraid, like, once I get one, like, I'll just get more. But I truly must be mindful of which Star Wars things I purchase. I think the sets that might break me to be in an automatic purchase are some Mandalorian ones. I know there's some coming, but man, what you're describing is really, really great. I would love maybe a big Razor Crest that's absolutely falling apart that also has a Frog Lady.
Yes. Oh, yeah, an updated
in
one.
Grogu. Yep. Yeah. I would really, really like that. And then I would love the Caladon City gates with the bell that gets cut in half and the Ahsoka with the two white blades minifig and Mando, and of course Grogu. Of course. Yeah, in a silver ball that's so small, you just have to believe it's there because it's actually too small to produce with the music.
Yeah. So
there's some Mando ones that jump to mind.
Yeah.
But the ones I think that you and I have talked about before, I really, really want some Palpatine from Rise of Skywalker. Oh, I would love Palpatine's Lab of Horrors. With a little minifig of Palpatine hanging from the claw arm, weird bubbling things, a minifig of Snoke floating yeah. in fluid. That would be great. Or half of Snoke. Or if a big set, the Sith Arena with both Palpatine hanging from the claw arm and Palpatine who made himself a fancy new suit with the dyad energy. Mm. And of course, then you get the dyad. Then you get a great Rey minifig that comes with Luke's saber, Leia's saber. And then of course you get great Ben Solo minifig. And then you get thousands of nameless Sith cultists.
Just set comes with 1,000 minifigs.
1,000 nameless Sith cultists.
Those are great choices. And you got me thinking, we're not done with this question yet, because you got me thinking, yeah, you could do a Palpatine Through the Years series. You could do the Squid Lake box scene there. And I was like, they can go back to Phantom Menace. Then I was like, you know what they need? They need the Naboo throne room with Padme and the Handmaidens.
Oh, yeah. Seo
Bibble, Panaka. They need to go back to that. Maybe a young Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon there, and young Annie, too. Like, I think you could do that. I'd like that.
Oh, yeah. The set that I have been most tempted by, and again, like I have literally picked them up and then said to myself, no, out loud in a Target. The one that I'm most tempted by is the Vader surgery, because I love it when it's like, it's a fun toy like Lego and it's a pretty horrible thing.
Yeah, it's great. I do have that one. And I got to say, you would, here's the thing I'll say. Oh gosh, I'm trying to convince you to buy something that you really can't. Price to go, fair price. But once you build that one, it could fit on the corner of a desk so easily.
Ah, oh, damn it.
It's tinier than you think, but it's so great. And yes, because you got the little flippity-doo action where you put in Anakin, boom, and then he comes back out as Darth Vader. It's great.
Oh, all right. I might need a flipping surgery table, Anakin Vader. I might need it.
So sorry.
Great question, Anthony. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. First up, Chris Kiefer. Chris says, I love the episode Ken and Billy did with the in-universe podcasts and shows. Simply brilliant. I always thought it would be fun to see an in-universe amazing race type show. Collect a clue from Dexter's Diner, then race off to Jabba's Palace, where you have to play back a sequence on the red ball jet organ that Max Rebo teaches you in order to get the next clue. Then it's off to Lothal for the next leg. Amazing race is done in teams of two. So my question is, who would you like to team up with in the Star Wars Amazing Race? Assume they can't use their powers or political influence as an advantage. Mm. So, that changes it. If you're not, you can't just be like Mace Windu and he'll smash everything.
Yeah.
What do you think? Who's your Amazing Race Star Wars partner?
Shout out to this is my buddy Chris. He's the best librarian in Southern California. All right, there you all heard it there from me. I was more of a Survivor fan than I was Amazing Race, but I'd watch some Amazing Race. And you need someone that's going to know their way around the galaxy, but even if they don't know their way, they can still find their way. Good communication skills. And I think also be a little crazy, they can be daring. And Din Djarin's an option. He knows his way around the galaxy, but I got two choices, Joseph. I got Padme, who has no problem going around the galaxy. He tells Anakin, I'm going to save Obi-Wan. You can come with me or not, but whatever. I'm heading out. And she's not afraid to go on missions and in the Clone Wars and go to places that are a little dangerous or heed the call, but also it's a diplomatic skills. I know he says, Chris says, you can't use political influence, but I'm talking about just political skills. She can do that. And then, yeah, Dr. Aphra is the other one. It's hard not to choose Aphra. She kind of is her own amazing race. Now, she might cause more problems for you. And that's often why I don't choose Aphra as a character in some of these fun questions.
Because she might betray you, right, if she needs to.
She might betray you. She's going to, her mouth's going to get you in trouble with some, you know, crime lord you're stealing from. But without a doubt, she has friends in low places, like a good old Garth Brooks song, all right? And she'd find her way around the galaxy. And she's fun. She's funny. She's got a great personality, good conversation. If you're stuck in a ship going around the galaxy, I'll talk to Aphra, you know, love Padme. Padme might be at times dour, a lot on her shoulders, a lot of the galaxies on her shoulders. And you know, I want to see if I can get Padme to laugh like she's, in a field of Shaq. So I might go Aphra, and those are my choices.
I think Aphra's a really great choice. My mind went to one specific person. I think when I was like, ooh, amazing race, I started to think about pilots and then navigation. And I was like, well, L3-7, right? Because she is established, is knowing the galaxy incredibly well, and that she probably knows shortcuts. And she would be very, very fun to hang out with. And yeah, I understand that Chris is limiting the question, so you can't just say like, "Yeah, I'm going to go with Obi-Wan Kenobi." And he mind tricks everybody, and he finds that you're like, "Yeah, we can't." You gotta, you know, actually do it. Yeah. But L3 also is clearly strong; would be able to defend me from any physical dangers that we might encounter on a Star Wars Amazing Race. So I got to go with L3.
That's a great answer. Great, yeah. L3, in watching Solo again. Much to discuss around the character of L3. I understand that. We always acknowledge that, but I don't know. I've started to appreciate L3 even more, for what she represents and what she brings to the Star Wars galaxy. So, and she's got the best, like I said, knows her way around the galaxy better than anyone. Best navigational database around.
That good is stuff. Right. So I think she would help me win Amazing Race, but I think you and Aphra would probably be able to steal it from us.
Yeah, if Aphra doesn't kill me first.
It's such a great choice. Aphra is a great character. I'm looking forward to spending more time with her comic books when I can find some time. But we're going to move on now to our final question from Alden Diaz. Alden Diaz has done what we invite our Patreon listeners to do, which is to write a little bit of an essay, share some of their own thoughts, and then ask our questions on that topic as well. So here we go. Mm-hmm. Alden says, "Hey guys, today I want to ask you to dive into the emotional realms of your mind. What Star Wars moments sparked the most unexpected and most powerful emotional reactions in your hearts and minds? I think that a lot of the beauty of the galaxy far, far away is how it can hit us seemingly out of nowhere with these profound beats of personal connection. Sometimes these moments don't even register until after they've happened. For example, lately I personally have gone to chapter 8 of the first season of The Mandalorian. The entire season had me hooked, and I knew I cared a lot about these characters. But I never expected to openly shed tears when Greef Karga looked at Din in the child and said, 'Or maybe he'll take care of you.' That, coupled with the shot of the baby looking over Din's shoulder as they flew away on the jetpack, mirroring Din's childhood experience with his Mandalorian savior, just hit me on every possible level of my dad issues and my tendency to seek out found family. Taika Waititi, Jon Favreau, Carl Weathers, and that damn adorable baby puppet reached into my soul and hugged the young version of me who was forever changed by the Return of the Jedi Death Star 2 duel, or the version of me 5 years ago who watched Han reach out to his son on Starkiller Base. Din flying away with his newly adopted son is Star Wars to me, so I'm curious if you have moments that affect you in similar ways, moments that feel uniquely yours. Thanks." Thank you, Alden. Great question. Ken, where do you go with this idea that there are moments that are, you appreciate them for what they mean in the story of Star Wars, but they maybe touch something that's really personal to you or to your life experience in the way that Alden's describing?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I struggle with the right answer to this question in a good way. I forced me to kind of dig deep and find out, you know, Alden kind of phrases this as a little bit of a surprise, unexpected, right? And there's a lot of things. I go to Rise of Skywalker. I've never cried as much as I have in any other Star Wars movie, proud to say. And
That's why for me that movie works. I know it doesn't for others, but there's a lot of moments in that that I would have, going in, I would have been like, I bet if I see something related to this, or I see this, the passing of Leia or something like that, I will cry. I was always unexpectedly moved in the moment of it's not a Navy, it's people, more than a way I would have thought. But those are things that I've talked about before or could say, yeah, I would have guessed. They would have got me. I will say there's two that I really decided upon, and I try to look all across the galaxy for this answer, Alden. Two. I'll start with simple one, Rise of Skywalker. Chewie getting Han's medal, or what we know as Han's medal, but if you're just watching the movie casually, you're like, Chewie got his medal. It works on both levels, by the way, for me. That got me in the first viewing and still gets me now, and I think I connect to a little bit of being the one who you know, this is going all through my life. You know, I've had a lot of fun in this digital media career last 4 or 5 years, and you and I, Joseph, have a lot of dedicated listeners who are pleased to meet us, and we are pleased to meet them, and that's a fun experience. But prior to my life, I'm a little bit of the one in the shadows, the one on the side. I am the one who comes off stage, and someone runs up to me and says, tell me about your friend. Like, I've lived a lot of that kind of stuff, and I struggle with it. It's issues. Like Alden says, he acknowledges some of the issues that lead him to search for found family storylines. So that's a little bit of me. And Chewie's kind of the classic number two. Who's there, a backbone, keeps things going. And I just was really moved by Maz going, hey, by the way, this is for you. And yes, it's Han and it connects to that, but it's just also a little bit of publicly now, you get this because you earned this and it's yours and I want you to have it. I want you to wear it proudly. And that shot of him showing everyone else, look what I got. Look what I got. It moved me, man. It moved me. And I just, again, unexpected. So there's that one. And then I'll say Ahsoka leaving the Jedi Order, end of season 5, was great. It was great when I watched it. But in studying it and highlighting it as one of the moments I wanted to write about in my book, or even our discussion of Ahsoka stuff this week, I keep going back to that as one of my favorite Star Wars moments for what it means. You and I, it's come up a lot in this episode, even with Rael Avras, of just what it means to be a Jedi and changing my perspective on that, but also attaching to things in my own life of being raised certain ways that I don't think the ways were wrong. I just think the reasons got lost along the way.
Mm. It's a very Star Wars experience.
Yeah. And that I'm still who I am. I am who I am. And I believe what I believe. And I think things work. But then expanding, you're just stepping out into a larger galaxy and looking back and going, well, that could have caused some problems. That does cause problems. And I want to find a new way that's all me, but doesn't sacrifice anything that I've been before. And Ahsoka continues to be that. That's why I say she's one of my favorite characters. You always say you look up to Rey and want to be like Rey, which is something I would agree with too. But I look at Ahsoka and I continue to learn from the character. Even now, I'm excited to see what live action Ahsoka can continue to teach me. And I don't know. And it doesn't always mean I have the answers from it. It just means it's like a study. It's a meditation. And forcing yourself to even find your way. And there's some real world issues and real world conversation points and perspectives and experiences I have and old jobs and everything where I still go, I am always going to be that, but I realize there's got to be a better way or a different way that more attaches to the heart of it. And that's the journey of Ahsoka and her leaving the Jedi Order, that episode. It gets me.
It's really powerful for lots of different, you know, big philosophical reasons, for lots of Star Wars reasons, you know, the gut punch to Anakin. But just that strength of walking away from something, you know, and for her, it's so much and it's philosophical and all that. But I think it's powerful to those moments, you know, particularly when we're growing up, of when we get to know ourselves enough to go, I don't think this is where I should be. I need to walk away from this. But the easiest thing to do would be to stay at, you know, this school, stay, you know, mm-hmm. in this degree, stay in this job, stay with this group of friends, and to have the power to turn away from it is really, really powerful. And I think Ahsoka's journey in that moment resonates from lots of different perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah. Still does.
Yeah. Yeah. Very strong. Great question, Alden. I don't think it is uniquely mine in any way, But I think for me, and I know I've talked about it before, but the twin sunsets, Luke staring out at the twin sunsets, I think in some ways, Star Wars grows and evolves and changes, but that for me is the anchor of Star Wars, mm-hmm. of that that wistful feeling of I am a part of something and there's more out there and I just don't know what my part is and I'm really anxious to go find it. It's so hopeful and wistful all at the same time. And I think when I was watching Star Wars a lot, you know, I saw the movies when I was a kid and I got to watch them there on TV. Every once in a while they'd be on in the library and I would, you know, try to convince my mother to just sit in the library for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But when I got to really just watch them again and again is when I finally had them on VHS and, you know, and that's when I really started to memorize every little beat that I enjoyed. And that was when, you know, I was really, you know, getting to that age where I really, really wanted to go out into the world. Mm. And I think that's when that moment really just truly became the anchor of Star Wars for me. So that one's always going to be powerful. I think one of the powers of it is that moment seems to speak to everyone. Everyone can just hear that, feel that. It might mean different things to different people, but that one is so powerful. And then, you know, a couple of recent ones, the Han's cheek touch, the, you know, mm-hmm. Alden mentioned it as well. The emotional effect of that, of knowing that Han is a character who struggles with his emotions. There's a way that Harrison Ford carries himself in Force Awakens, that he's got that beat up, you know, older jacket, even though he claims it's new. He's got that white hair. You know, I'm not saying my dad is as handsome as Harrison Ford. Apologies to my father. But he's got some, like, physical, like, energy stuff. And my dad's got, like, this big sort of mane of gray hair that has, like, an energy to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So my dad is somebody who, to his credit, was not raised to be open with his emotions at all. Mm-hmm. And has recognized that and has always worked to open himself up. So Han really doing that for his son, and, you know, and that moment, that means there's nothing that will make me stop loving you, and that cheek touch. So if it never appeared again, it would be powerful. But I just love the power of it coming back. And that gesture that Han made lives in Ben's memory and makes a difference down the line. It makes it even more powerful. And then the one that I, you know, I'm sure other people do find powerful, but I you know, I don't know if everyone bursts into tears, yeah. Like I have multiple times, is Rise of Skywalker. There's so many great moments. It's not a Navy. It's just people. Poe's elation when he sees that it was worth holding on to hope. Rey reaching out to the Jedi who have come before is all really powerful. I love that idea of in her darkest moment where she looks like she's lost everyone, she could just give up, and instead she takes a deep breath and she really tries to reach out for that support she needs. And all those lines are powerful and great. But Yoda's alone, never have you been, always breaks me. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think it's the one that there's a lot of ideas being expressed in what the Jedi say to her, you know, in the heart of a Jedi lies her true strength, is really powerful to some of the themes. Obi-Wan saying, you know, these are your final steps. Anakin saying, you know, restore the balance as I once did. They're all plugged into different parts of Rey's journey and in different parts of the story. But Yoda's goes to the heart of Rey's emotional journey of, even in those times like you felt like you're entirely alone, there have been people who have your back. And in trying to think about, like, well, why does that mean so much to me? And I think in general, I have a tendency to sometimes feel like I'm alone when I'm not. But I remember in particular, when I was getting ready to move to Los Angeles, I didn't think that some of my old friends from Minneapolis would support me. And I went on a kind of mini bar crawl with a couple friends, and a longtime friend of mine done shows together constantly, kind of in some ways, you know, grew up together, not when we were actually young, but grew up as adults together. Mm-hmm. You know, he was talking about something, and I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be there, but I'm going to probably move to Los Angeles by then. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I think that's right. I think that's, you know, where you need to go next. And we had had several drinks, so that was a part of it. But I started crying in the bar because I had no idea that he supported me. I didn't think he would. if I had brought it up to him. And it that's the Yoda moment for me of someone that you know of, you know, or maybe is close to you, and there's more support for you there than you realized was there. And just the joy and the comfort and the release of realizing you're more supported than you realized is really powerful to me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something in that. Good stuff. That's an answer. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So great question, Alden. Thank you for letting us go on the deep dive and do a little bit of a personal counseling for ourselves. Not even Star Wars counseling, just personal counseling here on Force Center.
Yeah. The Jedi voices are a nice warm blanket for me. I'm swaddled in that scene, in that moment. I just feel so good. And which is also ties to Lando, where there's more of us, Poe, there's more of us. It's the sun breaking at dawn after a tough trial. That's why that stuff works. So thank you, Alden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great, great question. So thanks, Alden. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Anthony. Thanks, Glenn. All great, fun questions this week as always. And we look forward to tackling even more fun questions next week.
Absolutely. We will do that. Hey, do you want to find us? Do you want to find us? You want to seek out like it's Amazing Race? You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram. I swear it. I'm going to get back to posting more things. That's on me. That's I handle that. That's my division of the company. And every day I forget about it. We're there. Find us on Instagram and force me to put more stuff on there. We're also on YouTube as well. We are rebroadcasting the news segments. More things coming. Podcast is available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Amazon Music now. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Get that Speculate Responsibly t-shirt and represent the brand designed by the great Brian Ward, who designed that Mandalorian watch guy picture that's going around. Poor Brian didn't put his watermark on it, and the internet has taken it for its own. But thank you, Brian.
The Gene Guy's vintage action figure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gene Guys. That's Brian's, and he does all of our Force Center work there. So check out tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and Brian Ward's tpublic store. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Always looking for new patrons to join the team and help us build our Force Center dreams. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to kennapsok.com for more information. Joseph.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures.
Absolutely. So for all the adventures in Star Wars that hit us right where it counts, and in the memory and honor of David Prowse, thank you, sir, for bringing life to the great Dark Lord of the Sith. This was Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.